This week, we talk about the revolution of the Masonic Convention. What's the real benefit to a Masonic Convention? Is there a future for such events? Next, we will finish our adventure in reading Ancient and Modern Initiation by Max Hindle with Part 2, Chapter 7, The Stigmata and the Crucifixion. What is the stigmata, and what do occultists feel INRI really stands for? We'll wrap it all up with a reading from Illumination Magazine in 1931 on The Art of Living by Spencer Kellogg, who lets spill the beans, the secret of life. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 494. Right off the bat, I want to go ahead and give a shout out to all of our supporters of the program. Whether you're a contributor, a fellow, a producer, or a legacy partner, or perhaps you've given a one-time gift, I want to thank you guys for continuing to allow this program to bring Masonic education to the world. If you'd like to know more about how you can help bring this program to the millions of people around the world interested in Freemasonry and, of course, its kindred sciences, as Albert Mackey would say, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show and see how you can help. In the news, I will say that I did get back from Attleboro, Massachusetts, MasonicCon event. It was really great, and there were lots of people there for the limited in-person engagement and lots of people watching online. It really was a wonderful event. I was a little surprised this year at some of the takeaways and some of the realizations that we've had over the last few Masonic conventions, whether that be MasonicCon in Attleboro or perhaps EsotericCon or even South Pasadena MasonicCon or MasonicCon Chicago or any of the others that are coming. And I think this week what I'd like to do is to start off to and give you guys a quick read of an article that's coming out Friday, and I'm recording this on Thursday, so it'll have been out for 3 days on the Midnight Freemasons, but I'd like to read it for you now on the show. The MasonicCon That Almost Wasn't. I have to say, before I start the piece, I'm pretty proud of the memes that I created, so if you're somebody who loves those, then check those out right there on the website on midnightfreemasons.org. But here we go. The MasonicCon That Almost Wasn't, by Midnight Freemason contributor Robert H. Johnson. Reminiscing. I've written about a bunch of Masonic conventions that I've been to, advocating, reviewing, and generally praising those few lodges out there with a dream of creating something more, something that seems impossible, something that embodies the best imagined things you ever had. If you're like me, it means sitting at a small dining room table, coated with wood veneer. You know the kind. It looks halfway decent until you sit at it every day and the edges are cracking. It keeps poking your forearms. You resist the urge to pick at it, lest your dad give you a whoopin'. I'd sit there every morning, resisting the urge to pick at the table, slurping my Cocoa Krispie cereal, daydreaming. I'd dream about all things fantastic. Sometimes it was about cartoons, sometimes it was movies, and sometimes it was Batman racing the Batmobile around the kitchen table, swerving around my cereal bowl. As we get older, our daydreams shift into things that we're actively involved in or want to be involved in. Getting that promotion, getting picked up to play AAA ball. Or maybe it's bringing a ton of brothers from around the country into one lodge with a full day of programming and dinner. That's just what Brian Simmons did a few years ago. He called some great speakers, got his entire lodge to help out, spread the word, and charged $5 per head at the door. Hundreds of brothers from all around the country showed up at Ezekiel Bates' doors. And then he did it again. And again. And not again. Yep. Another COVID sob story. COVID struck with a vengeance. Our lodges around the world shut down. It was like watching Toys R Us go out of business every day. Your soul hurt. So Brian and Ezekiel Bates pushed out the conference in 2020, in the hopes that they would be better able to accommodate the hundreds that would normally attend. The money had been collected, spent, and people were waiting, stakeholders chomping at the bit to get a taste of this thing now in its fourth year. People who'd watched it happen and read the reviews and social media postings about it, thinking, at first, this is nothing. The minds transitioned from indifference to curiosity to yet a compulsion to come. And then the conference got moved out because of the pandemic. Summer rolled around and Massachusetts, like the rest of the world, saw the uptick in COVID cases again. The world that had given us hope that we were on the other side of this thing had waffled. People let their guards down, cases rose, and restrictions once again forced Brian and Ezekiel Bates to put Masonicon on hold. Eventually, 2021 had signs of hope. Ezekiel Bates had pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, decided on a date, set everything up, and let their speakers know that it was time to secure your airfare once more. Going for it. We did. We called the airlines, booked our travel, and made our arrangements. May 1st, 2021 was going to be the day that Masonicon 2020-ish happened. And it did. With close to what seemed like 100 people in person and countless online attendees, the day went off with presentations from some of the most well-known and respected men of our fraternity in modern times. What if I told you Chuck Dunning and Ben Wallace took the stage together? Or two Freemasons who were pastors in their respective churches took the stage together? Or a presentation by Tony Chrisos, a man who lives the Orphic life, and he explained the system to us all in attendance. All this and more over a 9-hour day. It was exhausting, but in the best way possible. I had the honor of presenting amongst these titans, and I even got to sit on a panel discussion with Chuck, Ben, and Brian as they talked about the cognitive and emotional direction of the craft in the coming years. That night, we had a festive board, which was simply astounding. One bite of the prime rib, I looked over at Alex Powers, the host of Historical Light and the director of Kansas Lodge of Research, and he was stunned. "Who was the caterer? This is epic," he remarked. I replied it was Brian Simmons. While all these presentations were going on, he cooked up over 700 pounds of prime rib. That sounds like an accomplishment in and of itself now that I type it out. 700 pounds! What the hell's the point, RJ? You're thinking, great, another review of another Masonic Education Convention. Why do we want to know about this? Well, if you've read this far, or listened that far, great. Because something else happened over that weekend. Bonds were made, not only amongst the brothers of the craft, but the wives. I have never in my 11 years, as a brother of this fraternity, witnessed what I witnessed. The wives of the lodge members, myself, Alex, Joe included, hung out all weekend. They were laughing, having drinks, and genuinely enjoying each other's company. It was remarked over the weekend that none of us had received texts from our wives. Yeah, it was like that. They were literally all best friends, sisters. I even heard a rumor they have their own Facebook group now. A revolution. Sunday, May 2nd, 2021. I was sitting at a place representative of revolution. Three Freemasons sat at a table in the Green Dragon Tavern. Brian Simmons, Mike Jarzabek, and I. As we reminisced over the previous day's events, Brian said something that made us think. He said, "This whole thing, it's just a way for us all to get together. Yeah, there's the masonry that's for everyone and the fellowship, but look, it's all of us, our wives, and we're using this time to get together and be a family. We don't need Freemasonry to be an excuse to do this." And that's when it hit me. Freemasonry is the foundation stone of most of our lives. Sometimes we use Freemasonry as an excuse to see people or do something big. But maybe we don't need it all the time. Maybe we need to remember that the thing that connects us first is our humanity. Remembering this opens up new doors for us to be connected. We don't need a giant Masonic convention as an excuse to come together, but sometimes it helps. The future. The next Masonicon will be in New Hampshire. It will be handed over from Brian Simmons, the architect, to Ryan Flynn, renowned fine artist. With a new location, there will come new audiences, new brothers, and new approaches. It's sure to be amazing. While we wait for this next convention in 2022, more conferences are happening this year. In 2021, we're looking forward to Esotericon, which is not exclusive to Freemasonry, happening in June of this year. Cooperstown Masonicon, which will be happening in October, the 8th through the 10th. And in 2022, we will see the return of even more conventions that took a break due to COVID-19, like SPML or South Pasadena Masonic Lodges MasonicCon in 2022, Texas MasonicCon, MasonicCon New Hampshire, the Cooperstown event, Midwest Conference of Masonic Education, which will be happening in Kansas City, Missouri, and maybe even a Kansas MasonicCon or around there. There may be even more, and if they happen too, it'll be amazing. I had to answer the question a few times about MasonicCon Chicago, and the answer is no, there will not be a MasonicCon Chicago 2021, and likely not even in 2022. The next likely date for it will be 2023 or after. Continuing adventures. As for we, whose wives have become, according to my wife, a sisterhood, I suppose we're going to be doing a lot more traveling. And as we decide on where to gather just for the hell of it in the coming months, I could not be happier about it. Well, there you have reminiscent review, more of the internal kind of thoughts about MasonicCon in Attleboro. I hope you enjoyed. If you attended the event, please post your pictures and things in the event space that was on Facebook. I know there were a lot of people there who really had a great time, and that festive board was really nice also. I want to commend Brian for his years of service doing this. It was crazy at the festive board. I got called up by the junior grand warden, Brother Chris St. Cyr, and they gave me this award, a certificate of meritorious service from the Grand Master of Massachusetts, congratulating me on Masonic education efforts and having almost 500 episodes of the Whence Came You podcast. I was just so blown away, and so I just have to say out loud, you know, on the podcast, how much gratitude I have for the Grand Lodge of Massachusetts and to the Grand Master and the officers and brothers of Ezekiel Bates, my brothers there. This was just incredible and took me by complete surprise. I had no idea, and I think it showed. I looked like probably like a deer in the headlights when they took the photos, but a huge thanks goes out to all of them. For our Craftsman Plus out there, I want to know, how far are you willing to travel to go to a Masonic convention? Does it have to be in your state, relatively close, or are you willing to travel 1,000 miles to go see a Masonic convention? I look forward to reading your thoughts. Next up, I thought it would be appropriate to mention, I received in the mail the latest Scottish Rite Journal from the Southern Jurisdiction, United States, the May-June issue, and I pulled it out, and there on the cover is Dr. Brent Morris, Brother Brent Morris, and it says, Happy Retirement. So Dr. Brent Morris, Brother Dr. Brent Morris, is retiring after several years. He's got a neat little column in here called Confessions of an Accidental Editor. It talks about how he majored in mathematics and whatnot. I won't read this to you, but I will just say that it is a really nice issue of the magazine. I'll put a link back so that you can navigate over to the website and check it out. But congratulations and a happy retirement. Well-deserved, Brother Brent. Thank you for the years of service. And even some of you might know that in the past, the Scottish Rite podcast that was called The Life Masonic, I think it was, and it was Dr. Brent S. Morris was one of the hosts. A really cool thing back then. I'm not sure if the episodes are still available. If they are, I'll find them. I'll put them in the show notes for everybody. But Dr. Brent, congratulations on a happy retirement, and I wish you the best, brother. Next up is, of course, some of you have been waiting for. But before I get to that, I do want to just go ahead and say that, you know, it's Sunday night when you're listening to this, or maybe it's Monday morning on your commute or wherever you are on your run. The Midnight Freemasons probably just posted this article called Why Your Solutions Aren't Working, 2D Methods in a 3D World. You know, it is a great post. I read the whole thing, as I usually do, and it's by Brother Mark St. Cyr, who has been giving us some great kind of business coaching ideas for Freemasonry as we've gone along. He's kind of a problem solver, a corporate problem solver. And if you have any interest in that kind of thing, I really suggest you checking out. Even if you don't have an interest in kind of corporate ideologies and thinking when it comes to the fraternity, I think this is a really great, particularly great article because he talks about this 3D model and the way he talks about it is really interesting, kind of the life cycle of the Freemason. And he hits on some great points. It's a longer piece. but I think you can get through it pretty easily in, 20 minutes or so. But it is a longer article. It's kind of like a workshop of an article, really. It takes you through some things in your head. So I want to leave that for you and say, check that article out. I think you will enjoy it. So back to the thing I was just saying. Let's get back into Ancient and Modern Initiation by Max Hindle. We're going to finish it up this week with Chapter 7. It's entitled The Stigmata and the Crucifixion. Let's dive in. As we said in the beginning of this series of articles, the Christian mystic initiation differs radically from the occult initiation undertaken by those who approach the path from the intellectual side. But all paths converge at Gethsemane, or Gethsemane, where the candidate for initiation is saturated with sorrow, which flowers into compassion, a yearning mother love which has only one all-absorbing desire, to pour itself out for the alleviation of the sorrow of the world, to save all that are weak and heavy laden, to comfort them and give them rest. At that point, the eyes of the Christian mystic are opened to a full realization of the world's woe, and his mission as a savior, and the occultist also finds here the heart of love, which alone can give zest and zeal in the quest. By the union of the mind and the heart, both are ready for the next step, which involved the development of the stigmata, a necessary preparation for the mystic death and resurrection. The gospel narrative tells the story of the stigmata in the following words, the opening scene being the Garden of Gethsemane. Quote, Judas, then having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came thither with lanterns, torches, and weapons. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, Whom seek ye? They answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus said unto them, I am he. Then the band and the captain of the officers of the Jewish took Jesus and bound him and led him away to Annas first. The high priest then asked of his disciples and of his doctrine. Jesus answered him, I spake only to the world. Why asketh thou me? Ask them which heard me what I have said unto them. Behold, they know what I have said. Now Annas had sent him bound unto Caiaphas, the high priest. Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas unto the hall of judgment. Pilate then went out unto them and said, What accusation bring you against this man? They answered and said unto him, If he were not a malefactor, we would not have delivered him unto thee. Then Pilate entered into the judgment hall again, and called Jesus and said unto him, Art thou king of the Jews? Jesus answered him, Sayest thou this thing of thyself, or did others tell it to thee of me? My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight, that I should not be delivered to you. But now is my kingdom not from hence. Pilate therefore said unto him, Art thou a king then? Jesus answered, Thou sayest that I am king. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice. Pilate said unto him, What is truth? Then he went out again unto the Jews, and said unto them, I find in him no fault at all. But we have a custom that I should release unto you one at Passover. Will ye, therefore, that I release unto you the king of the Jews? Then cried they all, saying, Not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. Pilate therefore took Jesus and scourged him. And the soldiers plaited a crown of thorns and put it on his head. And they put on him a purple robe and said, Hail, King of the Jews! And they smote him with their hands. Pilate therefore went forth again and saith unto them, Behold, I bring him forth unto you, that ye may know that I find no fault in him. Then came Jesus forth wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said unto them, Behold the man. When the chief priests, therefore, and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, Crucify him, crucify him. Pilate said unto them, Take ye him, and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. The crowd said, We have a law, and by our law he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God. Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, If thou let this man go, thou art not Caesar's friend. Whoever maketh himself a king speaketh against Caesar. They cried out, "Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him!" Pilate said unto them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Then delivered he him, therefore, unto them to be crucified. And they took Jesus and led him away. And he, bearing his cross, went forth into the place called the place of a skull, which is in Hebrew Golgotha. There they crucified him and two others with him, one on either side, and Jesus in the midst. And Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross. And the writing was, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." End quote. We have here the account of how the stigmata, or punctures, were produced in the hero of the Gospels. Though the location is not quite correctly described and the process is represented in a narrative form, differing widely from the manner in which these things really happen. But we stand here before one of the mysteries which must remain sealed for the profane, though the underlying mystical facts are as plain as daylight to those who know. The physical body is not by any means the real man, tangible, solid, and pulsating with life as we find it. It is really the most dead part of the human being, crystallized into a matrix of finer vehicles which are invisible to our ordinary physical sight. If we place a basin of water in a freezing temperature, the water soon congeals into ice, and when we examine this ice, we find that it is made up of innumerable little crystals having various geometrical forms and lines of demarcation. There are etheric lines of forces which were present in the water before it congealed. As the water was hardened and molded along these lines, so our physical bodies have congealed and solidified along the etheric lines or force of our invisible vital body, which is thus, in the ordinary course of life, inextricably bound to the physical body, waking or sleeping, until death brings dissolution of the tie. But, as initiation involves the liberation of the real man from the body of sin and death, that he may soar into the subtler spheres at will, and return to the body at his pleasure, it is obvious that before that can be accomplished, before the object of initiation can be attained, the interlocking grip of the physical body and the etheric vehicle, which is so strong and rigid in ordinary humanity, must be dissolved, as they are most closely bound together in the palms of the hands and the arches of the feet. And the head, the occult schools concentrate their efforts upon severing the connection at these points and produce the stigmata invisibly. The Christian mystic lacks knowledge of how to perform the act without producing an exterior manifestation. The stigmata develop in him spontaneously by constant contemplation of Christ and uneasing efforts to imitate him in all things. These exterior stigmata comprise not only the wounds in the hands and feet and that in the side, but also those impressed by the crown of thorns and by the scourging. The most remarkable example of stigmatization is that said to have occurred in 1224 to Francis of Assisi on the mountain of Alverno. Being absorbed in contemplation of the Passion, he saw a seraph approaching, blazing with fire and having between the wings the figure of the crucified. Saint Francis became aware that in his hands, feet, and side he had received externally the marks of crucifixion. These marks continued during the 2 years until his death, and are claimed to have been seen by many eyewitnesses, including Pope Alexander IV. The Dominicans disputed the fact, but at length made the same claim for Catherine of Siena, whose stigmata were explained as having at her own request been made invisible to others. The Franciscans appealed to Sixtus IV, who forbade representation of St. Catherine to be made with the stigmata. Still, the fact of the stigmata is recorded in the Breviary Office, and Benedict XIII granted the Dominicans a feast in commemoration of it. Others, especially women who have the positive vital body, are claimed to have received some or all of the stigmata. The last to be canonized by the Catholic Church for this reason was Veronica Juliana, 1831. More recent cases are those of Anna Catherine Emmerich, who became a nun at Agnetenberg, Lestatica Maria von Morel of Caldero, Louis Latou, whose stigmata were said to bleed every Friday, and Mrs. Gerling of the Newport Shaker community. But whatever the stigmata are, visible or invisible, the effect is the same. The spiritual currents generated in the vital body of such a person are so powerful that the body is scourged by them, as it were, particularly in the region of the head, where they produce a feeling akin to that of a crown of thorns. Thus, there finally dawns upon the person a full realization that the physical body is a cross which he is bearing, a prison and not the real man. This brings him to the next step in his initiation, vis-a-vis the crucifixion, which is experienced by the development of the other centers in his hands and feet, where the vital body is thus being severed from the dense vehicle. We are told in the Gospel story that Pilate placed a sign reading Jesus Nazarenus Rex Judeorum on Jesus' cross, and this is translated in the Authorized Version to mean Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. But the initials INRI placed upon the cross represent the names of the four elements in Hebrew: I am, water, nor, fire, ruach, spirit or vital air, and yabsha, earth. This is the occult key to the mystery of the crucifixion, for it symbolizes in the first place the salt, sulfur, mercury, and azoth, which were used by the ancient alchemists to make the philosopher's stone, the universal solvent, the elixir vitae. The two eyes, I am, and yabsha, represent the saline lunar water, a fluidic state holding salt in solution, and B, the coagulated extract of this water, the salt of the earth. In other words, the finer fluidic vehicles of man and his dense body. N, in Hebrew, stands for fire, nor, and the combustible elements, chief among which are sulfur and phosphorus, so necessary to oxidation, without which warm blood would be an impossibility. The ego, under this condition, could not function in the body, nor could thought find a material expression. R, ruach, is the Hebrew equivalent for the spirit. Azoth, functioning in the mercurial mind. Thus, the four letters INRI placed over the cross of Christ, according to the Gospel story, represent composite man, the thinker, at the point in his spiritual development where he is getting ready for liberation from the cross of his dense vehicle. Proceeding further along the same line of elucidation, we may note that INRI is the symbol of the crucified candidate for the following additional reasons. IM is the Hebrew word signifying water, the fluidic lunar, moon element, which forms the principal part of the human body, about 87%. This word is also the symbol of the finer fluidic vehicles of desire and emotion. Nor, the Hebrew word signifying fire, is a symbolic representation of the heat-producing red blood laden with martial Mars, iron, fire, and energy, which the occultist sees coursing as a gas through the veins and arteries of the human body, infusing it with energy and ambition, without which there could be neither material nor spiritual progress. It also represents the sulfur and phosphorus necessary for the material manifestation of thought, as already mentioned. Ruach, the Hebrew word for spirit or vital air, is an excellent symbol of the ego clothed in the mercurial mercury mind, which makes man and enables him to control and direct his bodily vehicle and activities in a rational manner. Yabsha is the Hebrew word for earth, representing the solid fleshy part which makes up the cruciform earthy body, crystallized within the finer vehicles at birth and severed from them in the ordinary course of things at death, or in the extraordinary event that we learn to die the mystic death and ascend to the glories of the higher spheres for a time. This stage of the Christian mystic spiritual development therefore involves a reversal of the creative form from its ordinary downward course, where it is wasted in generation to satisfy the passions, to an upward course through the tripartite spinal cord, whose three segments are ruled by the Moon, Mars, and Mercury, respectively, and where the rays of Neptune, then the lights of regenerative spinal spirit fire. This mounting upward sets the pituitary body and the pineal gland into vibration, opening up the spiritual sight and striking the frontal sinus. It starts the crown of thorns, throbbing with pain as the bond with the physical body is burned by the sacral sacred spirit fire, which wakes the center from its age-long sleep to a throbbing, pulsating life, sweeping onward to the other centers in the five-pointed stigmatic star. They are also vitalized, and the whole vehicle becomes aglow with a golden glory. Then, with a final wrench, the great vortex of the desire body located in the liver is liberated, and the material energy contained in the vehicle propels upward the sidereal vehicle, so called because the stigmata In the head, hands and feet are located in the same positions relative to one another as the points in the five-pointed star, which ascends through the skull, Golgotha. While the crucified Christian utters his triumphant cry, "It has been accomplished," and soars into the subtler spheres to seek Jesus whose life he has imitated with such success, and from whom he is thenceforth inseparable. Jesus is his teacher and his guide to the kingdom of Christ, where all shall be united in one body to learn and to practice the religion of the Father, to whom the kingdom will eventually revert, that he may be all in all. End of Ancient and Modern Initiation. Wow. So we read this thing over 13 weeks. If you travel back 13 weeks, of course, we had to skip a few because we had interviews or whatever, but 13 episodes that deal with this particular book. No doubt Freemasonry is very secular, and this book is very Christian and New Age. I think regardless of your religious persuasion, the New Age lessons that are in the text speak to a lot of us. And I hope that the listeners of the show who do practice this kind of Christianity or these viewpoints found these to be a really valuable part of the show. Now that this is all set, I'll go ahead and get to work putting it together for you all to be able to download, and that should be available in the next few weeks. If you've known anything about the so-called stigmata, if you followed some of the cases of stigmata throughout the ages, and there was even like a horror movie that was made about the stigmata in, I think it was like the 90s or early 2000s maybe, and the idea is that somehow somebody's chosen, the stigmata begins to happen, and for whatever reason, there's usually a supernatural effect, you know, that's got to, you know, battle some satanic force here on earth or something. Here in this particular piece, it talks about this idea of a spiritual stigmata, which can have actual physical manifestations and what this means. And perhaps it is a clue that you're getting closer to ascension or the ability to separate your physical body from your waking consciousness. But nonetheless, I mean, I think this whole book is pretty interesting. It was a pleasure to read. I hope, even though I don't buy into everything in the book, and I'm sure you don't either, maybe you do, it was valuable in looking at the philosophy from that point of view. For our Craftsman Plus out there, I would like to ask you, in terms of this narrative on the Christian mystic and the New Age doctrine that Max Heindel is putting out here, just looking back over the 13 episodes where we read a chapter, I'm curious, did you have an aha moment, even if it's not directly related to whatever your practice of religion is, did you have an aha moment with something that Max Heindel may have revealed to you? I have my own answer, and I'll go ahead and I'll add that to the Craftsman Plus so that you all can read my answer for it. Next up, I want to read this short piece that actually comes from a magazine called Illumination. It was Volume 1, Number 3, published in 1931, and it was by Spencer Kellogg Jr., entitled The Art of Living. Painters, sculptors, musicians, poets, writers express through their respective mediums the inner life of the soul. But as each type of artist or creator is a specialist, his specialization, while important, is not final, is not inclusive. It is exclusive. What then is an inclusive? A synthetic art? It is the art of living. The art of living is the most important of all arts and the most difficult. To make life beautiful, all roughness of habit and ugliness of character must be hewn and washed away in the pure striving toward the perfect synthesis or simplicity of oneness, the perfect work of art. Just as a work of art may be beautiful or less beautiful, so life or living may be. What are the indications of that beauty? The beauty of a work of art is qualified by its usefulness. Ornament cannot exist by itself. It must ornament something, and that ornamentation must not interfere with its usefulness. This does not mean that in order to be beautiful, a canvas by a great painter should be used as a fire screen or a windshield. It may be useful in an entirely different way in the expansion of consciousness. But if we are to make our lives beautiful works of art, we must understand what beauty is. How may we come to that understanding? By the contemplation of beauty. We must feel, feel and feel for beauty. That beauty which is everywhere, not alone in man-made works of art, but in all creation, the garments of the one self of nature. We must contemplate, then ask ourselves why this, that, or the other thing is beautiful. We will discover that harmony, rhythm, order, and unity have a lot to do with it. It is not always easy to discover the usefulness of the Creator's works of art, but that is not the Creator's fault. Where we are able to discover their usefulness, we will see that in some way depends on service, obscure though that may be. And the greatest and only pleasure, that pleasure which is lasting, comes with a service that is born of love. In order to serve best, we must understand all that we can of beauty. Art is the bridge between man and soul. Art is universal. Next to love, it is perhaps the first language understood by all peoples under the sun. Why is this so? It is because of beauty. Beauty which cannot be separated from truth and goodness. God clothes itself in a beauty because it is also truth and goodness. Beauty is the mantle of the infinite. Through art, then, there is a possibility of bringing humanity to a keener realization of the supreme fact of the brotherhood of man. Man is a creator, is essentially a craftsman imbued with spiritual ideals. As the illusion of separateness has more and more obscured the truth, his pristine soul has become clouded through contact with ugliness. Quote, "Let not your heart be troubled," end quote. Let us not despair. In all of us burns the fire of eternal youth, unquenchable life, for the one self, time and space do not exist. For the human, these are but states of consciousness. We are living in the everlasting here and now. Birth and death are but incidents in one long life. Death is but an open door to greater adventures. I hope you enjoyed that short piece from Spencer Kellogg Jr. He speaks in a somewhat poetic way, as he refers to something as usually defined as an art or the beauty of poetry. Let's ask that philosophical question then. What is beauty? Some say beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but then is that indicative of subjective nature, a subjective opinion? What does philosophy say about subjective and objective opinions of truth? Well, you might not like the answer, but there is a strong case against subjective truth, which is interesting and kind of goes against what society is after today. A realization of people's subjective truths and respecting their viewpoints on things, of course, but it's hard to marry those things up. I digress. Back to the Craftsman Plus. What is beauty? Let's ask that general question. That's it for this week. I hope you all enjoyed this episode of the Whence Came You podcast. I want to once more thank our supporters, our fellows contributors, producers, and legacy partners, and of course, everybody out there who has made one-time gifts to assist us in our programming. If you want to learn more about this and how to support the Whence Came You podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com. Click on Support the Show. My thanks once more goes out to the Grand Lodge of Massachusetts, Grandmaster Most Worshipful Maggio, and of course, Brothers Jarzabek and Simmons and Chris St. Cyr, all of the members at Ezekiel Bates. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much. That's it for this week. So until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.